Yechezkel is 48 prakim altogether. Yechezkel was a unique Navi. He started his Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael and then went to Bavel, or he started his Nevuah by water in Bavel, but he was always by Bavel. Now, he was exiled in the Gullus of Yehoyachin. Yehoyachin was the exile that was the 11 years before. Tzipia was exiled before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's when he had been exiled. He went to Bavel along with the Cherish and the Mizgah, with all the Talmidei Chachamim that were there. He prophesied exclusively for the people in Bavel. However, he was flown around quite a bit. We're going to see six different places where Yechezkel is taken on a flying carpet and thrown into different areas. He speaks to Hiram, the king of Tsur, about his problems and things like that. There's a lot of crazy things that he does. The greatest thing about Yechezkel, probably the thing that he's the most known for, is his visions of Shemaim, his visions of Amala. Chazal compared him to a villager who saw, you know, the big city for the very first time. That Yeshaya was already used to it. Yeshaya lived in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. He saw crazy stuff already. So when Yeshaya saw what he saw, wasn't impressed. Yechezkel, however, saw everything. He was just like wide-eyed and like open-mouthed, like a guy going to Manhattan for the very first time, and like seeing all the big buildings and everything. He's just like, this is crazy, and he speaks about it at length, much more so than what Yeshaya quoted it from. And we're going to see like how he words everything and how it goes. We're going to have a difficulty because there is no Miyam Loez on this stuff.
But just remember, Manhattan or more like Vegas?
Manhattan, we'll call it that way. We're going to mention that there is going to be a lot, you know, he was there from the days of Yoshia, which was, you know, the final real king of Yehuda, and then for Yoshia's son, who was it? Who was the first one that was there? Yoshia's first son that was there. It was Yehoyachin second, but there was someone there first. Then, Is Yehoyachin? Yehoyachin? Yechoniah. That's it. Yechoniah. Right? And then finally, Tzidkiah. Right? He was there for all those five kings altogether. Well, he wasn't there for Tzidkiah. He was already in Bavel. Right? But he was around during those times.
And isn't there the prophecy of the third Beis HaMikdash?
Eventually, we're going to get to the very, very end where you start seeing visions of what the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt as. Now, that was taken away by Haggai. Haggai takes away that vision and says, wait, that's the third Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash is going to be this. And he changes things around because Bnei Israel did not deserve to have the third Beis HaMikdash. But Yechezkel does have a crazy vision of what the Beis HaMikdash is going to be. Now, Parak Aleph Pasuk Aleph says, "Vayi b'shalosh b'shana b'revi, b'chamish l'chodesh," was in the 30th year in Tammuz, the 5th of the month. "Vayi b'shalosh b'shana b'revi," I was among the exiles on the Har Kvar. I was sitting by the river that's known as Kvar, right there. "Nitzchol Hashemayim," at that point, the heavens opened up, "Erem Maros Elokim," and I was able to see a vision of everything that was going on in the Shemaim up itself.
Wait, what is that? Who is his contemporaries? Like, who's alive at this time?
Yirmiah, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel, Mordechai, all of them are alive. Yeah. Right, those are the people that are alive at the time. He was around during all of those times. All of those times. He went up to Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. You obviously went back and built the second base. Make sure he was alive during Ezra's time. Ezra and Nehemiah were alive at the time. Zerubbabel. All of those people were alive at the same time. So again, this is in Tammuz on the 5th of the month. That means right around this time. Well, what day is it today? Is it the 5th of the month? No, that's what I'm saying. Hold on. Rosh Chodesh was when? Rosh Chodesh was? Rosh Chodesh Tammuz was Wednesday, Thursday. So Thursday, 2nd was Friday, 3rd was Sunday. Oh, man, 4th is the 6th. Oh, that stinks. That would have been awesome if we did. Anyway, then he saw this vision again. Now, what does it mean by 30 years altogether, right? We don't know. So some say that there was Ruach HaKodesh involved over here, and that's what he's referring to over here. Others say it's been 30 years since he's been alive, right? In the 30th year of when he was alive. That's when he ended up getting this Nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Others say he was referring to the last Yovel, the last Jubilee of the Gullus that they were just coming from. That's how the Mitzvot David says it and stuff like that. But he does not explain what it refers to over there. They do say that it's referring to some of the kings as well. And the 5th of the month, which was the 5th year, Legolos HaMelech Yehoyachin, since Yehoyachin had his exile. So now, they were already, during the times of, you know, Bnei Yisrael, they were already in the reign of Tzidkiah at that time. But this is the 5th year during that time. Hayo Dvar Hashem al Yechezkel ben Buzi. So the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to Yechezkel ben Buzi, HaKohen Be'eretz Kazdim. He was a Kohen who lived in the land of Babel, on the Har Kvar, around that river. You see that the Har Kvar is stressed over here. And the reason why it's stressed is because a Navi cannot start his Nevuah if it's not by water. For those who say that he was a Navi back in Eretz Yisrael, then he can continue his Nevuah in Babel. If he was a Navi for the very first time in Babel, then how Huckabee get a Nevuah for the first time in bubbles and Tamei land? How is that possible? The answer is, by rivers, you're allowed to have that happen. It is possible for that to happen, and that's that. Okay, that's what Rashi says over here. Yecheskel ben Buzi, obviously this is a very strange name. Nonetheless, we know that any Navi whose father is mentioned in connection with that Navi, that means that his father was a very, very holy, special person as well. Okay, so Ve'era, I looked. There was a stormy wind coming out from the north, obviously referring to the nations that were coming from the north to swallow up the Jews. It was a big cloud which was cloudy, which obviously meant that they were unclear, and there was a fire that was going within it, meaning referring to the terror that happens when the northern wind comes through. There was a brightness to it all around, right? But even though Bnei Yisrael were going to go into Golos, and they were going to be coming from, Nebuchadnezzar was going to come from the north and destroy the base of Mikdash, nonetheless, there was a bright light all around that eventually were going to have a Geula. In the midst of all of that cloudiness and everything, there was a Chashmal. Chashmal is referring to a Malach, that's what they're called. It has an appearance like fire, and that's what it's referring lightning. To over here. Yeah, almost like lightning. That would be the idea of what it refers to over here. Others say, what is a Chashmal? It comes from the Chayos HaKodesh, when they talk to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Chai Memal, when he speaks, the Chai of Esh, and that's where the Chashmal comes from. It comes from there, Mitocha Esh. They came from the fire itself. Mitocha to Musar B'Chayos. From within that light, from within that brightness of that Malach, I was able to discern four Chayos. In other words, the four-headed face of one of the Chayos HaKodesh, the highest level of Malachim that you can possibly get to out of the 10 levels that the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah. Chayos HaKodesh are the highest form, and of them, there are four faces to every one of the Chayos HaKodesh. The four faces are, we'll see. Mizemarehim. This is how it appeared to me, and this is what I was able to see from the Chayos. Dumus Adam Lahena. Other than their faces, they had the Dumus Adam, meaning their entire bodies were shaped like a human being's, right? The Chayos HaKodesh. And one of the faces ended up being an Adam. That's what it refers to. Now, there's no such thing as a back to a Malach. There's no such thing. So we say they had four faces, even though in theory, in three-dimensionally, you should look at it as face over here, face over there, face over there, face over there, right on all four sides, but there is no back to the Malach. So because of that, it really appeared to you as if you saw four faces right there in a row, as if you were looking at a four-faced creature. I don't know that for sure. That's how I understand it from what the Gemara says in Chagiga. I just understand it a little bit because we're not dealing with fourth dimension when you get up to that level. Either way, arba panim lachos, right? There are four faces to each one. The arba knafayim la'achas mehen, and each one of them have four wings altogether. If it's done correctly, then if there were four malachim and each one of them had four faces, then you have four times four, which is obviously 16. If there are four wings for each one of those faces, right, then altogether there would be 64, right? 64 wings altogether that we're referring to over here. Ragleim regli yisharo. Their feet were straight. And the reason we learn from over here, obviously, Shimona Esrei, that you have to put your feet straight in order to be domed to a malach, to be comparable to a malach. The kaf ragleim, and the way their foot looked on the bottom, kikaf rogel, regel egel. It looked like the foot of an egel, of a regular egel. Okay, that's the idea behind it. In other words, you can learn it as a cat's leg. You can learn it as a round leg. That it looked almost like a wheel. As if there was something that was rolling on the bottom, as if it was just a tire on the bottom of the Malach. Now, why does the Malach appear that way? The Malach is always moving, never stopping in place. So even though there's one leg,
it's like a segue.
It's all, yeah, almost looks like a segue. Consider it like that. They noted him, and they were sparking. There were sparks coming out. Ke'ein nechosh is like copper, kalal, that's very shiny. Now, although gold and silver are obviously more expensive than copper, copper is a mila that it shines the sun. When the sun shines on it, there's an extreme brightness that comes from it, and that's what they look like. It was as if they were shining so brightly from it, and that's what the copper is referring to over here. Now, that's what it refers to in the first part over here. Also, by the way, Raglam or Ragli Yishara, they did not have any knees. There were no knees to any of the Malachim that it's referring to over here. The day Adam mitachas kanfehem, the hands of an Adam were underneath their wings. In other words, they had six wings altogether. And underneath the wings, there were hands, arms, the way a normal human being would have. I'm sorry?
Did they have elbows?
I don't know, actually. I don't know about that. Al Arbats Rivehem, on all four sides of them. Upanev and Kanfeim L'Arbatsum, there were faces and wings for all four of those sides. Chobros Isha L'Chos HaKanfeim, their wings were one up against the other. However you want to refer to this, L'Yisabu V'Lachton, they did not turn when they went. Isha L'Ever Panav Yilehu, they all went toward the face, the place that they were facing, that's how they would go. There was no such thing as turning around, that's first of all. There was no such thing as turning from one side to the other. There was a job for them to do. And the way that we understand Malachim is that they're omdim. They stand in place, but they don't obviously stand in place because they're moving. But they're, so to speak, they just do their job and that's that. So they were rolling in one direction and they were going in no other place you could possibly imagine. I don't know how else to describe it. Udumus peneim, pene adam, upene ariel, yamin larbatam. The faces, the way they looked, is there was an adam, which is king of everything, and an aryeh, that was the king of all the wild beasts, toward the right side of Midas HaChesed. Adam and aryeh refer to the Midas HaChesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Upene shor me'asmol larbatam. Then there was the axe on the side of Midas HaDin, as we'll see later. The shor was taken down because of the Egel Azov here on earth. They took away that face of the shore and it became the face of a kruv, which looks like a little baby.
It was because of Yosef. I thought that was at that point is when it was taken down.
There's a question when exactly it happened. When it says about Abraham ruts el ashore, he ran to the shore in order to shecht it for the malachim that came down. Chazal darshan from there that Abraham changed the shore to a kruv. That's what they darshan it from. That's the original idea. What you're referring to by Yosef is at the very, very end of Vayichi, when the Shvat, after Yaakov Vinu dies, and they're worried that Yosef's going to do something, they said, Sonam. They said, Shor Aryeh Nesher Adam. Right? And they refer to, you know, the that was switched over to Anna, which is, I forgot what it was. It's added on the Kruv. Anochi. Anochi is what it refers to. Anyway, but that's that. The Shor is on the Midas Adin, as a side note, by the way. The Ramban learns from here that this is the reason why Bnei Yisrael made the Egel Hazav in the Midbar, because they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was an Adam and was treating them with chesed, but they were obviously in the level of Midas Adin now because Moshe Rabbeinu is dead, so they took the shore from the left hand side, from the Midas Adin of the Kiyusei HaKavod. They took the axe and they made an Egel Hazav out of it. And then it says over here, Upenei Nesher La'arbatan, and then the eagle, the shore is the king of the behemos, the Nesher is the king of the Ophos. Some say that the Nesher is not really an eagle, it's a vulture. Those people just, I don't know. There's no way that a griffin vulture is like the king of all birds. You know what I'm saying? Like,
they're non kosher birds. Yeah.
They're definitely not kosher birds. The Nesher actually has all four simanim of a not kosher bird, meaning it has it doesn't have a zufik, which is the extra little crop in its stomach. It doesn't have korkavo niklaf, which means that the stomach, there's no fold in the stomach itself. It doesn't, it has an extra finger on its wing, or an extra little finger on its wing, and it eats animals. All four of those are signs of a not kosher bird. A kosher bird cannot have any of those four. So the Nesher actually defines, right, that all the simanim that define a not kosher bird. It's really a different
question.
There's a lion. No, it's a different, it's a different question. Why is the shore represented? Because we all know there's Gemara Chulin and Kuflam test that says that every animal on land that's kosher has a counterpart in the sea that's not kosher. And every animal on land that's not kosher has a counterpart in the sea that's kosher. So in other words, I'm just saying, the dog, right, is not kosher. But the sea dog would be kosher. I'm not saying that specifically. Whatever it would be something that's kosher. Shamayim in the heavens is another area of water. So an aryeh in water is kosher. A nesher in water is kosher. But the shore isn't. So the real question is, why is the shore on there? Because the shore is not kosher, as opposed to all the others.
The human being,
is no shechus to kashrus. No shechus to kashrus. It's just Adam. Right? It's not part of the whole system. The Rambam does say there's an isra to eat a human being. The Ramban says that there's no isra. So
there's a mermaid in the water.
Ah, good question. Upnei and the kanfeim prudas mamala. Their faces and their wings were separated from on top. In other words, you could differentiate between the four different faces. You could differentiate between the different wings that were up on top. Yishtaim Chobrus Ish, Ushtaim Achazos Yosef. For each one, there were two that were connected to the one next to it, and then there were two that were covering up their bodies. In other words, the two things right over there. No, they don't have scales.
Oh, they don't?
There were two wings that were covering up their entire body. The Ish Aliver Pana Vilechu. Each one went opposite the face of their friend. In other words, they all had their job of what they had to do. Whatever the ruach told them to go, that's where they went. Then they not turn around in how they went. Now, listen, we want to give an example of this. We can't understand Mari Yecheskel. We don't understand this, you know, unless we really get into it. Chazal tell us in Chagiga in the beginning of the second parak that you only darshan merkava biyachid. The ma'aser merkava has to be done by a person by himself, and he has to be maven midaito. He has to understand it on his own. He has to be a chacham in his own right. So a person is not allowed to darshan it publicly or go over these things publicly. There are ma'asim over there where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was approached by, I believe it was Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. I don't remember exactly who it was. One of his Talmidim and the Talmud said, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch said, can we learn ma'asim merkava? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told him, you can only learn it. You can't learn it. I can't teach it to you. It's got to be biyachid. So Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch said, can I tell you what I learned in ma'asim merkava, and you can tell me if it's correct? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, okay. He got down off his donkey, sat down on the ground, wrapped himself up in a towel, sat down on the ground, and said, okay, go ahead and darshan. He said, why do you do that? He said, you're going to darshan a ma'aser merkava, and all the malachim are going to come to listen. You want me riding on a donkey? It's not happening. So he got down on the ground, and he started darshaning, and a fire surrounded them, and the malachim all came to hear. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai got up, kissed him on the head, and said, that is hain ma'aser merkava. Okay, then Rabbi Yossi HaKohen and Rabbi Yeshua got a little jealous, I guess. Right? They looked at him, and they said, well, we want to darshan the ma'aser merkava. So they darshan the ma'aser merkava, and the same thing happened to them. And they went to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and told him what had happened. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, oh, I had a dream that you two and me were on Har Sinai, and they were saying, come up to us. And we decided not to go up. Unbelievable Gemara. And then the Gemara said that there were kids.
Right?
What?
Yud-Gimel.
Yeah, right around there. That makes sense. Yud-Gimel, Yud-Dalet. Yud-Gimel, Vez, Yud-Dalet, and Aleph. Yeah, that makes sense. So either one of them, I mean, there's no question. There was one kid who was darshaning ma'aser merkava, and when he was darshaning and trying to go through, a fire came down from Shemayim and consumed him. Like, it obviously means, I don't know how old the kid was, I would assume it's not like a 5-year-old kid, I would assume it's like a 50-year-old guy who just wasn't ready for it. He was a kid when it came to ma'aser merkava. So you don't darshan these things, you know, correctly. But for us to be able to at least have a semblance of what's going on here, this is how God works. God has a merkava, a chariot that goes through the world. What that means to us is he has a way of making the world run on its own through what we call nature. And the whole world runs that way. I should say it this way. In a microcosm, that would be like nature. But in a macrocosm, with the whole universe running, there's a chariot. It's like the constellations moving is, so to speak, the chariot of God making them go. The whole universe is being run in that way. And if we understand it that way, then we can say that we can look at these things as something a little bit different. We are hearing, or Yecheskel was watching, how the world runs. Each chaya is in charge of something happening, and how the kokos come down to earth, and how these things are brought, and those things are brought.
Learning this,
and there's
learning ma'aser merkava?
So to speak, yeah, if you really understand it, you can understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the world
here,
run.
If, unless there were a purpose for it.
Oh, there is a way to darshan it. You just got to be on that level. Yeah. Get to that level, and then we'll talk. And oh, one day we won't talk. that's not happening. This is darshan on your own, and that's that. You know what I'm saying?
You know.
Yeah, and I'll be like, oh, that's not it. Either way, but the way I do get it is Hashmal and Bezek are going to be used over here. Think of how electricity works with protons, neutrons, and the way they run around, so to speak.
I get the bills from the utility companies in Israel.
You can think that as well. I'm okay with you thinking that way. That's why they call it that, by the way.
I know.
Right, obviously, right. But either way, regardless, think of it in that vein, in the way that protons and neutrons work, in the way that they run back and forth through it. They're making the light shine. But you don't think of it. It's just behind the scenes, there's millions of these protons and neutrons and these things that are working to be able to make the light shine. But you're not thinking about that. Every single one of them has billions of things going. That's the way to understand the Chayas HaKodesh. They have a job, there's something to do, and each one of them is a king. They have their jobs that they're in charge of, and that's that. And they go. They don't turn, they go exactly as it's supposed to go. Yud Gimel. Tuus Achayos Mar'ein Kigach La'esh. The appearance of the Chayos look like coals of fire. Boros Kamari Lapidim. They are burning like torches. He... Mishalech has been a Chayos. This Mare goes between the Chayos. And Ogal La'esh. And there's a shine to that fire to them. Even Eish Yotze Barak. And from that fire comes out lightning. Bolts of lightning that comes down. The Chayos Rotz of a Shov. And those chayot are running back and forth to Maria Buzik, the way that normal electricity would go. For us, this would be a Maria Buzik is really for lightning, the way it's supposed to go. And that's what they're doing. They're going from one place to the other place, etc. The Ira chayot, and I looked at those chayot again. In a Ofan Echad, and Ofan is another malach. We've got three malachim that we've mentioned so far. We've got the Chashmal, we've got the chayot, we have the Ofanim. Okay? We mentioned most of them during our davening in the morning, right? Ofanim, chayot, kodesh, mesnasim, lemasa, sorafim, etc. In a Ofan Echad, ba'aretz, etel chayot, there was an Ofan, la'arbas panov, right, for the four faces. Now, Ofan also could be translated as a wheel.
A wheel.
A wheel that would be there, a bike. That's what you're going to say, Ofanayim, right? Right, and an Ofan is really a wheel. And that's what you were saying before. Their legs were round. So the ability to fly from one place to the other, and that's that.
I mean, angels on Segways.
Angels are the Segway, dude. They are the Segway. But that's that. But that's the idea behind what we're referring to over here. Chazal say that there's a hint to a tremendous malach whose name is Sandal, whose last name is Phone, right? Sandal is the high, one of the highest malach that are up there in Shemayim, who knows the ways of the Satan and is trying to take care of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way. Others, it's mentioned in Chagiga that Sandal has the ability to make crowns out of the mitzvos in Torah that Bnei Yisrael learn and throw it up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it goes on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's head, whatever that means. Now the appearance of the Ofanim and what they look like is almost like an emerald or crystal, which was echad l'arbaton, right? There's one appearance for all four of them. And you can see the Ofan within the Ofan. In other words, this wheel that the Chayos HaKodesh, so to speak, were riding on, which is known as an actual Malach, that the Chayos HaKodesh were, so to speak, stepping on, or that was allowing them to go, even they had a certain appearance, and they looked like it was a wheel within a wheel within a wheel within a wheel.
That doesn't mean one angel over the other, but it's two. Like, one angel could be riding another angel, right? Like, theoretically. It's like a creature. Like a
Yeah, by definition. And they're not insulted by that. Every malach has a level.
Purpose.
And they know what their level is. Right. That's exactly how it is. Arbas Rivean Belechtam. And all four sides, as they go, Yelechu, they go, Lo Yisabu Belechtam, they do not turn. But yet you can still see all four sides at once as they are going. The Gabayim, the Gold of Lahem, the Yir of Lahem. Their height, everything about them, there's a fear to them. The Gabosam, Malayos, Nayim, Saviv. Right? Gabosam really means their height. How do you translate that? What does the article say about that?
Which one?
Put the 18. Where they got both some?
Their eyebrows? Their eyebrows.
Their eyebrows?
Yeah.
Are filled with eyes all around? So either way, what it means is that they're looking on all sides. So their eyes all around. So that there's no place that isn't filled with eyes by all four sides. As the chayos go, the ofanim go with them. When they go up a bit from the land, then the ofanim go with them. Call the substance of the world, so to speak. That is true, and that's to be able to see what's going on. Right. These also have the ability to see everything in the world if there's a physicality to them. Regardless, it means that whatever the top malach does, the malach below it also does. It's almost like a mirrored image, like a shadow almost. The Ofan follows the Chaya wherever it goes throughout the entire world. And that's the idea behind it. So it says, Awashir Yashama Ruach Lachas Yelecho. Again, wherever this spirit is for a Kodesh Baruch Hu for it to go, it goes. Shama Ruach Lachas. Falfanim Yinasul Masam. And the Ofanim go opposite them, because the spirit of the Chai is within the Ofanim, and something is connecting the two of them. As they go, they go. When they stand, they stand. When they carry up above the ground. Now, if you looked on top of the Chai, now we just looked on the bottom. Look on top of the Chai. There's almost like a heavens that looks like an awesome big sheet of ice. That's what it looks like on top of the Chai. That is completely spread out on their heads up above. Underneath the rekia, you see that their wings are evened out, each one opposite the other. For every one of them, there were two covering them up. And each other one had the two that were covering them up, all of their bodies. So we already said they had six wings altogether, two that went all the way above, two that covered up their bodies, and two that were toward the bottom. The way that the noise that their wings made as they flapped sounded like the noise of rushing waters. Kikol Shaddai Belechtam, like the noise of stars in the sky as they go. Now, I don't know what that refers to or what that means in any which way. I would assume that there is a coal that goes through when there's a comet or a meteor, but just remember, space has no sound. So I don't know what that means. There's no such thing. There's such a vacuum in space. There's no actual sound. There's no such thing. You can't have it.
Have you seen any movies?
I've been told that there's a movie that came out called Gravity,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Where it's entirely silent.
I've never seen it.
That's what I've heard. I don't know.
It's not entirely silent, but it shows you the silence of space.
The silence of what it's supposed to be like. Everything, even if something's moving, there's no such thing. It swallows up the sound. So
you're talking about something that has a gaseous structure to begin with, so it already has its own gas. So it could be that when it's traveling, it's
already
some sort
doing
of sound
something.
Barriers within itself.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what it is. But whatever it is, a star normally can't move. I mean, unless there's somehow a gravitational pull. Well, I guess maybe it can through a black hole. Because the gravitational pull is stronger than the star. Star doesn't move, right? Star is the only thing in the solar system that doesn't have a movement to it, right? However it goes. Kolamula kakolmachne. The noise that goes through it, almost like an army going through. It's a loud, loud noise. The umdum tarpenikanthan. And then when they stand, that's when their wings stopped. But he called me Alaric, yeah, there was a voice that was coming from above the heavens, the Shal Roshan was above them, the Umdam Tartanikanthan. And when they stood, that's when their wings went. I guess when the voice went out, that's when everybody stopped. That would be like a Kadosh Baruch Hu speaking, so to speak. And Malaric, yeah, Shal Roshan, and then above that heavens that was on their heads, Kamari Evan Sapir to Muskise. At that point, when I looked above those heavens, that icy substance that was there, on top of that, I saw sapphire stone, the appearance of a throne. Okay? Now, sapphire comes in many, many different colors, but the typical sapphire is a blue, a dark blue or beautiful blue sapphire. It's like how the normal stone that they refer to. So it's a kisei, the color of sapphire, Dumusa kisei, and on that kisei, I saw Dumus Kamari Adam Alav Nomalo, the appearance of almost like a man that was sitting on top of the kisei itself. Now, this is exactly, says the Rambam, what Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see when he said, I want to see your face. I want to be able to see an appearance that I would have in my head, this is how the Rambam learns according to the Migdal Oz, that I would have in my head that whenever I want to think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I think of this image. That's what I wanted to be inside my head. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, you will never see my face, you'll only see my back. So to speak, Yechezkel was able to see that face that Moshe Rabbeinu had was eluded from him. Call it a vision that he wanted to see, or call it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt now he was ready, while Moshe Rabbeinu was not ready for it, whatever he was.
I thought the Pasuk says something like that, no man shall live.
Lo yirah adam v'chay. Yeah. That is the line. So it could be that Yechezkel was on the level where it was as if he was dead, or this nevuah was just something totally different. Totally different. Ve'era ke'en chashmal. And then I saw, right, the appearance of the chashmal, kamariyesh, almost like a fire, beis aviv, with a surrounding of fire around him, imari masnav lamala, from the loins above, imari masnav lamata, and from the loins below. Reisi kamari ish minogolo saviv. I saw that appearance of fire, and there was a brightness all around it. Everybody look
no
at Rashi. Wait. Look at Rashi for a second. Do you guys see Rashi?
No question was drank to ponder over this verse.
Lo natan rishus leis bonim b'mikra zeh. Don't even bother. Don't even bother. That's awesome. Which means, it tells me two things. Number one, that this pasuk is the most awesome in all of Tanakh. That's number one. Number two, that means the other ones Rashi understood. And each one of the perushim of Rashi is some type of a sod, a secret behind it that we're not privy to. Because if he's saying this is the only one he can't, but the other ones, he's like, yeah, it's just making a noise. That means he clearly was referring to something else and giving you hints as to what the real shot behind it is, and we're just not privy to it.
But he's saying you don't have permission
about it. Yeah.
It's different than saying that this isn't for mankind.
No, you're 100% right. By the way, as a side note, this is based on the Gemara, because the Gemara Chagiga does say, but Erech in Chashmal is, that's the end of where our understanding
is. Yeah, but nowhere
in
here does it say that Yechezkel actually looked Hashem's face. He just
Oh my gosh, we're going to see it in like 4 prakim, by the way. Like the appearance of the rainbow that would be in a cloud on the day of rain, that's the brightness. It was all different colors. It appeared as a prism in front of my eyes. That's how I saw it. That is the demus of what I saw as the honor and the glory of God. When I saw it, I had to fall down on my face. And I heard a voice speaking to me from within that area. You may lie.
You might have touched on this before we started. Every Nebuah has a point.
when it's given over and when it's repeated. And like we just went through Jeremiah, where he repeated prophecy after prophecy to tell them to try to correct themselves and lie, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. What is the point of this parak? Like,
it's clear. Nobody had any clue that there was a plan. Is there a plan, God? Is there an idea of like what you're doing with us? Why are you sending us to Babel? What's going on here? Like, it was hard for them to go to Babel and to realize the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed. What's the plan? What do you want from us? What's the whole idea? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was showing Yechezkel to tell the people, there is quite a plan. We have a massive plan. I've got unbelievable odds of Malachim going everywhere. Okay? There is a plan. You're just not going to be able to understand it. You're not going to be able to get it. That's clear that's the
trans amount of Seder in the world.
Yes.
Like everything has its part and mission.
Yes, exactly. And everything's there. I took care of everything. You just might not see it. You might not be able to see it. But that's the idea behind it. Stand up on your feet, Bad Dabra Osach. I want to speak with you. Osach is in a feminine term because Yechezkel right now could not handle the amount of power that Hashem was giving him. But Tabubi Ruach, I got a spirit, Kashudibir Elias, he spoke to me about Tamidani Aragwai, and I was able to stand up on my feet weekly. And I was able to hear that which he was speaking to me. Now I'm going to send you, notice, by the way, Osach. The masculine term, it was Osach, and now it's Oscha. He, by the strength that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, and turned him into a masculine figure. He didn't have females a week. Al Bnei Yisrael, I'm going to send you over to Bnei Yisrael. Al Goyim Hamordim Asher Modubi, to the nations, really refers to the Shvatim, that the rebellious ones that rebelled against me. Hey, my babos, and they and their fathers, Pashubi, they did wanton sins against me. And Etzem Yosei, up until this day, until this very day. Obviously, a reference to Etzem Yosei is a reference to when they left Mitzrayim, right, and how they went out. They left the these children of mine, they are hardened, you know, hardened of faces. In other words, they do not want to listen whatsoever. And strong of heart, meaning strong of spirit, and they're very, very stubborn. And I am going to send you to them. And you'll say to them, this is what God says. They, whether they listen or whether they don't, because they are rebellious people. They will then know that at least there's a Navi between them. Right? There's a Navi among them. Maybe they won't do anything else. Now, this is an important point. I don't know how many Nevi'im were actually in Babel. We know that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah got Nevuos. There's no question about that. But Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah's Nevuos might not have been said to the people in Babel. They might not have heard a Nevuah in the 5 years since they've been there. There may not have been a point where they had ever received a Nevuah. And to that, he was saying,
hey, didn't Jeremiah go up?
Not to Babel.
He was on the way.
No, he sent Nevuos to Babel, but he never went to Babel itself. Remember, yeah, he went with the people that were going to exile. But by the way, that was after the exile.
Well, he sent the note.
By this time, after Golos Yoyachin, before Golos Sidkiah, right, they might not have ever had one. He wants them to know you have a Navi, Vatav Ben Adam. And you, O son of man, Altir Mayhem, do not be afraid of all the people, Medi Abraham, and from all their words, Altir, do not be afraid. He's throbbing the Salon and Masal. They are going to refuse you. They're going to rebel against you. And they're going to be like thorns to you.
He's back to feminine.
Osach, yeah. Well, you're going to be weak at that time, right? You're going to be sitting among scorpions. Do not be afraid of the words. Do not show fear in front of their faces. Just because of rebellion. You're going to speak my words to them. Whether they listen or not, because they are rebellious. That's a lot of times that he's saying that they're rebellious. I think that's the fourth time. Now listen to what I'm going to tell you. Do not be rebellious like the people that are rebellious. Pitzei picha, open up your mouth. Interesting word of pitzei. In last week's parsha, it says the word patsisi eso adama. I'm going to open up the ground, and it's a huge open mouth. And this means like let out everything. And consume that which I'm going to give to you. In other words, take it in. It's going to be difficult for you to take in this nivuah and to be able to say it over to the people, but do it anyway. The era. And I looked. There was a hand that was sent out to me in Abel Megillah Sefer, and within the hand was a Megillah Sefer. There was a whole Megillah that was being given over to me for me to read. The Yifros Osa Lefanai. It was spread out in front of me, the Ksuba Panivachor. It was written regarding the past and regarding the future. What happened and what will be. Inside it was written lamentations, right? What happens to the tzaddikim in this world. They're moaning, their schar, that they're going to moan about, that they're only getting in Olam Haba. And then groans of the Rishayim in Olam Haba. Of everything that's going to be. And that's what was written inside there. Pretty crazy parak, right? But you're my life. Ben Adamus is your Tim Sachol. Michael, whatever you find, that's what you have to consume. Achol's Megillah says, eat up this Megillah. The Lech Daber Bnei Yisrael, go tell it over to Bnei Yisrael. Now remember, this is a Nevuah. A Nevuah for a person like Yechezkel is going to be while asleep. In other words, he is not awake. He is not doing this in physical. So the Megillah being consumed was only a remez to what was going on. It was not an actual, this is what he actually did. That's not what happens. But after this, I opened up my mouth, Yechezkel's Megillah says, and I was fed this Megillah. It's delicious. Your stomach will consume, your innards will be filled with this Megillah. I did it. It was so sweet. It tasted like honey to me. It tastes like honey. And here's the pshat. Although there was going to be a lot of groaning and a lot of pain for all of Klal Yisrael, he understood that when all of it is gone, then there's going to be sweetness as honey. Olam Haba is going to be sweet as honey, and there's not going to be anything wrong. We might have to do a lot to get there. It's going to take us a lot to be able to get to that point. But once it's there, it's going to be sweet as honey, and everything's going to be fine. Go again and again to Bnei Yisrael and speak these words on you are not going to a people, to a nation, right, that is deep of tongue, right, and hard of language. I'm sending you to Bnei Yisrael. It's not a person, that nation that you don't know, a language that you don't understand. Send you to Bnei Yisrael. I'm sending your own brothers. Well, I'm in Rabbi.
Why is that even necessary?
Yirmiyahu, remember, had a lot of Nevuos that were dealing with the other nations. There was going to be Obadiah that's going to speak to Edom. There's going to be other Nevi'im at the time who had a lot of Nevuos for all the other nations. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Yechezkel, that's not going to be your job. The only person that he was shayach to, that I remember, that he spoke out of Nevuah to, was, do you remember offhand? Hiram, king of Tsur. Hiram, king of Tsur, is only because he had such a close relationship with the Jews. He was considered almost like a Jew himself. Anyway, I'm not doing that. It's not to them that I'm going to send it to you. Hema yishmu elecha. These people, they would listen to you. If I sent you to the other nations, they would be like, oh, good. And they would listen. But Bnei Yisrael not going to want to listen to you. Because they don't desire to listen to me. That's a good word for the word avos. The word avos doesn't just mean fathers or prototypes. It also means desirers, the people that desire. Because all Bnei Yisrael, they're strong in their forehead, they're stubborn as much as you can be. Therefore, I'm going to make your face strong, opposite their face. I'm going to make your forehead strong, opposite their foreheads. Like the hardest rock of Shamir. Now, obviously, this could refer to the Shamir worm, which had the ability to bite through rock. Or, simply put, like the strength of a diamond I have given to you and I've made you.
It's stronger than flint.
Than flint, that's what it calls it?
No, flint was hard. I guess it is. They make flint.
Yeah. Wait, the Shamir was stronger than flint.
Yeah, Shamir is stronger than
flint. But the Shamir may be referring to a diamond. Obviously, the hardest structure that we have in our world today is a diamond. Right? That is by far the hardest thing that we have. There's only synthetic materials that we're able to make to be able to cut diamonds, but diamonds cut diamonds. That's basically how it goes. But a diamond is the best. The natural substance on earth that is the hardest is a diamond. That's what they call it. Anyway, not like diamond to get in the frame, you know, not those.
No,
the industrial diamonds. The ones
that industrial diamonds are less hard. The ones that are gem diamonds are even harder.
Oh, really?
No, yeah.
That was the opposite.
No. They have less inclusions. They have less.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Oh,
the pure diamond, less inclusions are less reason that would
very, very. Right. That's a good call. That is a very good call. Well, see some of those things, man. Don't be afraid of them. You have to be strong in them. You have to be like a shamir. Keep basing your hand up because they're so embittered. So, son of man, right? Everything that I say to you, take in your heart and listen with your ears. I want you to go to the exile to the people of your people, right? Listen. This is what God says, if you listen or not. Then the wind picked me up. And Yechezkel flew for the very first time, but not the last. Yechezkel flew up in the air, and I heard behind me, as I was being flown, I heard a great noise that came out and said, Baruch Kvod Hashem Nimkomo. Blessed is the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from his place. None of the Malachim know where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. That's why they say Nimkomo, from his place, wherever it is. They have absolutely no idea where that place is, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes. The Kol Kante HaChayos Mashikos Isha Lachosa, the noise of the wings of the Chayos, which are hitting against against each other, so to speak, as if kissing each other, one for the other. Kol ha'ofanim lumasim, the ofanim, the wheels below them, those malachim, was after the mekol rash gadol. You heard this huge noise that was all behind you. Ruach nesasani v'tikacheni, but the wind picked me up and brought me. Va'ilach mar b'chamas ruchi, and I went embittered, angry of my soul. Yad Hashem alai chazaka, but the hand of Hashem was strong against me. Now, why was he so embittered? Why was he so upset? He knew he was going to have to fight the other Jews. We don't know much about, listen, the personality of all the Nevi'im is very questionable. What their actual personality was, you know, what kind of a character assessment of like what kind of a person there was. We have no idea. We're not given any information.
They all seem to be pretty grouchy. And they seem to be all like really pissed off.
It does not help me to say such a thing, because that's only how the Navi makes them appear, they're saying over these things.
Eliyahu is basically like second part of them. Elisha gets pretty fiery.
I don't see Elisha getting fiery, but he's
had the kids eat, like torn up by bears.
The 42 kids.
It's a huge burden. That's because it's not a thing.
Yeah, but this is the first part. Remember, this is before even starts. The idea is that it could be that Yechezkel was the nicest person in the world, and that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go and do this, what he was so upset about is he couldn't handle, you mean I'm going to have to argue with the Jews? I can't do that. I simply put, I cannot be that person. And when he heard that, he just couldn't deal with it. And Yad Hashem alai chazaka, and Hashem was strong against him and said, "You're not going anywhere."
This goes all the way back. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, like when he has to deal with the Jews, like they all get frustrated at a certain point. You kind of get the sense that they're all like just get really upset.
But we don't take that as pshat. And the reason why we don't take that as pshat is because when we know what Moshe Rabbeinu was like, meaning the greatest son of all time, and Anav doesn't get frustrated. Otherwise, he wouldn't be the greatest son of all time. And as much as we like to attribute characteristics to a person like Moshe Rabbeinu and say, no, he's just like any other person. You're right, Moshe Rabbeinu was not like any other person. So therefore, I don't understand in that vein. And that's why it's so important for Chazal to come along and say, no, that's not what it means. It means something else entirely. Because it doesn't make any sense to say, he's such a humble person, he's the greatest man of all time, the greatest Balmidos, and he gets frustrated, he gets angry, like this week's Parsha, angry and hits a rock. He's like, guys, I can't take this anymore. You haven't argued with me for 39 years, but finally,
it might be on a higher level, but you can't deny the fact that he's a human being and he has feelings. I mean, and those feelings are real.
You can deny it with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu went above those feelings. He was not a human being anymore. He was no longer with a wife. He no longer had a family. He was not a normal human being. That's one of the reasons why he had to die. That's okay. I have Chazal on my side.
I don't know about that. You're pushing the limits on that one.
No. It's clear. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to separate. He was not like the other Nevi'im. What you just said is exactly Miriam's Lashon Hara. Literally, Moshe Rabbeinu is just another man like everybody else. He has feelings, he has emotions, he has everything else. So that worked out pretty well for Miriam, didn't it?
I think it's different. Just saying that I think it might be on a higher level, it might be in control of him, but he's still a person.
Yeah, that's what Miriam said.
Okay.
It's pretty good. She was wrong. The Abo El Agola. The Abo El Agola came to the exile. Tel Aviv. Right? This is not Tel Aviv. He didn't go to Tel Aviv, right? He went to an area near Babel called Tel Aviv. Hayoshim on the Harkvar, who was right by that river, by the Kvar. But Eshev Hema Yoshim Sham. And I sat down there, and they were sitting there. Eshev Sham Shivas Yom Mashmin B'Seichom. I was there for 7 days, quiet among them. I did not say anything. I wanted to see what they were like. I wanted to see what they were doing, what these people were. But you make say Shivas Yom at the end of 7 days, read of Hashem Eli, and the word of Hashem came to me saying, Ben Adam, Seif Nesatich Lebeis, I made you a Navi. For all B'nei Zor Shematim V'Dovar, and you heard something from my mouth. These hearts of many, I want you to warn them from me about what's going to happen. But Amil Rosh Mos Tamus below these hearts, when I say to Russia, you surely will die, and you don't warn him, if you don't speak to the Russia to return from his evil ways and make him live, who Russia, Baboni Amus, then he'll remain a Russia, and he'll die in his own sin, the Domiyat Chavakish, and I'm going to blame you. Your job, Yechezkel, is not to sit down and watch them and realize that these people are doing wrong. It's to tell them what they're doing wrong so that they can improve and not die. And if you're willing to do that, great. And if not, then I'm going to have to do something about it. So that's what he's saying. The Asaki is hard to Russia, Voloshov Mirisho, Umidarko Roshov, Baboni Amus. And now, if you warn the Russia, but he doesn't return from his wickedness, and he doesn't go back from his evil ways, ways, then he'll die in his ways. Atlas naturally tells him, but you will at least have saved your own soul. At least you'll be able to be able to save yourself. So therefore, you are there to be able to take care of them, to do what you're supposed to do. So don't worry about anything else. When the shuv tzaddik mitzid go, but also avel. When the tzaddik does tshuva, right?
I like how these nazim have options. It's like, so by the way, you're going to do this because if you don't, then...
Well, yeah,
you're going to be responsible for that.
Or Chayiv Misa, because a Navi that withholds his Navu is Chayiv Misa. So that's, you did have a problem. Shuv Tzadik Mitzidko, when the Tzadik goes back from his righteous deeds, for also Abel and does sins, when it's not in Mikshal with Anav, right, then I will put a Mikshal in front of him, Huyamus. Because I'll say that that's the reason why a Tzadik will die at an early age. When a Tzadik starts going off, a Kadosh Baruch Hu kills him before he goes any worse. So he can still be rewarded for all the good that he did, and he won't be punished for all the bad that he could have done. If you don't warn him before he goes off, then he'll die in his sin. All of his sitkus will never be remembered because he went back on all that Asher saw. And I'm going to blame you for that tzaddik as well. He's hard to tzaddik when he warned the tzaddik. He doesn't sin. He was warned, right? So he'll live. That's not really telling. Then you'll save yourself as well. So in Pasuk of Beis, the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was against me. He says to me, "Kum seir labiko, shama dabrosoch. Get up, go to the biko, go to that valley. Right, I'm going to speak to you there." So he's already got mission number one. Mission number one was to go find those people. He found them, did not say anything, and Hashem said, "That's not what I commanded you to do." Second one is go to the valley. And I saw the honor of God appearing by the valley, like I saw it by Nar Kvor. And I fell to my face. And the spirit came to me. And stood me on my face. Now go. I want you to close yourself out, right, in your house. Close yourself up inside your house. That no, you won't speak to anybody. So you show they don't even deserve to hear your musr. They're going to put upon you chains and they're going to tie you up with them. Okay, you are going to be tied up, so to speak, inside your house. You should not walk out among the people. And when the people ask you, "Hey, Yechezkel, why aren't you hanging out with us? Why aren't you coming to my wedding? We want you to be Miss Outer Condition. I'd like you to be Sandik and a Bris." Yechezkel would tell them, "I'm not allowed to come out of my house. Not allowed to be there. I'm not allowed to hang out with you because you guys are all evil and you're going to die." Right? That's what he was going to tell them. Your tongue will stick to your palate and you will become mute. Will not be able to say anything to them because they're so embittered. When I speak to you, only then will allow your mouth to open. Those who listen will listen. Those who don't. Because they're so embittered. So once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him, "I'm going to tell you what to say, and only then will you speak. But other than that, I don't want you to speak at all. There's no word that you should say other than that." Can you imagine living his whole life like that? Not being able to speak. I don't know if he actually became a mute, or just he didn't speak. I don't know which one it was. But nonetheless, Perek Dalet. Maybe this will be the last part for today. Vasa ben Adam, Kachla chol levena, Venasato chol levena. Take a brick, put it in front of you. The Chakosa lay iris Yerushalayim. I want you to engrave the city of Yerushalayim on top of that brick. Okay, this is one of the crazier little visions you're going to have. Engrave all of Yerushalayim on a regular brick in front of you. Venasato la matzor. I want you to make a siege, right, in that, on the brick outside of the city of Yerushalayim, and then build up a tower, and then pour on it some type of, put on it some type of a ramp, and put camps of Babylonians all around, and put battering rams everywhere. Okay, this is getting a little too detailed, right? How am I supposed to put that on one brick? And then take for yourself a massive thing of iron, and you will make it into like almost like a wall of iron between you and the city. You will prepare your face, you will siege it. The Yisrael will be a sign for Bnei Yisrael. Remember, the Beis HaMikdash has not been destroyed yet. Yechezkel was showing them what was going to happen. There was going to be a picture of Shalom with a brick and everything on it, and then there's going to be an iron wall that you're going to make, you're going to put up in between you and the brick, and it's going to be like this. You, so to speak, are referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This iron wall is the sins of Bnei Yisrael that keep God out, and meanwhile Yerushalayim is being destroyed.
This is like an old PowerPoint.
Yeah.
from Israel.
Yeah. That was Shkavot Tzidkat Smoli. Go sleep on your left-hand side. That is the halacha of how you're supposed to be able to sleep. You're supposed to sleep on your left and then turn to your right in the middle of the night. Samson's over the Yisrael love, but I want you to think about the sins of an Yisrael while you're on your bed. Mispar Yom HaShartishkov Alav Tzidkat Amonam. The same way, the amount of days that you sleep on it, that's how you should carry their sin. I want you to sleep in an uncomfortable position. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling you, I want you to think about B'nai Yisrael's sins and to take on their pain. When it's after all, Shnei Avonam, right? I'm going to give you those two sins for the number of days, 390 days. Okay, that's the idea behind it. Now, the reason why is because they sinned for 390 years from when they came into the land until the Aseret HaShvatim had come in altogether, right? If you find that, that's Mefurish, there's 243 years from Yerubim until Hoshea ben Ela. And the Shvat HaShoftim was 111 years. So that's 354 altogether. And I don't know how you come out with 390. We're missing like 40. Oh, I guess Yoshua, they add on the years of Yoshua, and there's a couple others that are mentioned over there. Okay. When these are over, then I want you to sleep on your right hand side. Shane is another side. This should be 40 days. I'm going to give you one day for every year, right? The same way that, remember, by the Meraglim, they sin for 40 days and end up getting 40 years in the midpoint. Put your face upon the Seed of Yerushalayim, your arm should be uncovered. Minikisa aleha, right? That's what it's supposed to be. Minikisa aleha, you will be hit upon that arm if you're waging war against Nebuchadnezzar and you're losing that war. I'm going to put these chains upon him. You will not be able to turn from side to side until those days of pain are up. You should take wheat and barley, lentils and beans, right? Millet and kusmin. Is spelt, thank you. Minasato is on the kli, you should all put it in one kli, vasiso some makol lechem, and make one thing of bread out of it. Oh gosh, it's like the whole grain bread. And the amount of days that you sleep on your right hand side shows me what teaching you will talk. That's what you'll eat for 390 days. It's not going to taste kishmak. You're going to have horrible bread for those 390 days.
Well, maybe it's good. Wheat, barley, beans, lentils, and millet.
I don't know about the lentils. Machol kasher tochlenu b'mishkal asur shakal yom. Your food that you will eat should cost, or it should weigh, I think, altogether, a total of 20 shekel per day. Me'esad eis tochlenu, you will eat it. Me'esad eis, I think that means from night, from day to day. Every day you will eat that amount of food.
How much is shekel?
Shekel, I think, is a weight. I don't think you're referring to the actual thing. Mayim b'mesur tishtad, you will drink a certain amount of water. Shish sahin, a sixth of a hin, me'esad eis tishtad, you're going to drink it every day. You're going to eat a cake of barley. It's going to be made out of the coals of the doo-doo of people. To Genelainam, it's going to be made in front of their eyes. Now, obviously, he's not. That's how it's going to be baked.
Excrement before their eyes. They use coals from animals.
It's just tastes. I'm sure
it's out of human dung.
Yeah, that's not going to be great. Now, Yom Hashem Kocha Yoklu B'nei Yisrael. That's what B'nei Yisrael is going to eat. As Lachman Tami, they're going to eat their bread as if it's Tami. They're going to eat disgusting stuff. But Gamash Radiyah comes from throughout the nations that I bring them there.
I don't understand why they're making him eat it.
It's almost like a kapara. This is what B'nai Yisrael is going to be like. But Omar, and I said, Aha, Hashem, look, and now she let me to Ma'al. My soul is not Tameh. I never ate anything that was Tameh throughout my entire life. I never ate an Avela Trip, even accidentally. In other words, if I never did anything wrong, why in the world am I going to have to eat something that's bad now? The little above the feed is our pigle. I never ate anything that was pigle. Even something that had a kasha, that a chacham had to matter up or anything like that. I never ate anything like that. I never even had tumah at night, says Rashi over here. Kaddish people know that stuff. But what he's saying is that there's no way that ever happened to me. So all of a sudden you're going to give me something like that? How could it be? So Hashem said to me, listen, I'm going to make it, you're right, I'm going to make it cow dung instead of human dung. And you'll make the bread on top of them. And you're like, oh, phew. Don't don't know exactly how that I guess it isn't as disgusting. I'm going to break all the bread that's in Yerushalayim. They're going to eat a certain amount of bread and with worry. They're going to drink measures of water and in confusion, knowing that the siege is happening and that there won't be enough time to eat or drink. They will always be lacking bread and water. They will be missing each man and his brother, and they will wither through their sins, and that's what's going to happen. And we'll stop with that, guys. Per K.